Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is Robert Forto, and I am hosting today from the mushing capital of the world at my home studio here in Willow, Alaska. And on the line we have writer and filmmaker of Mush the Movie. If you haven't seen it yet, I'm sure it is available on the website at mushthemovie.com. If not, we're going to find out how tonight. His name is Alex Stein, calling in from sunny California. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. The race is really shaping up to be a very, very exciting event, and a lot of things have happened today. So, people following either in Alaska or from all over the world are in for, I think, a very, very exciting next 5 or 6 days.
I think so, too. It looks like a majority of the mushers have taken their mandatory 24-hour rest. It looks like everybody all the way down to Cindy Galea, I believe is how you say her last name, have taken their 24s and a few after her as well. Any news to report on the 24s? Are there anything good happening, bad happening there that is cause of concern?
Not really. A lot of the mushers took their 24s in Takotna, which is a very, very popular place, and some of the racers who were farther back in the pack were taking their 24s in McGrath. And, of course, Martin Boozer took his 24 very early in Roan. And in a strategy that nobody really saw coming, and then was able to leapfrog over the other mushers and is now in first place out of Iditarod.
Yeah, he has definitely made up time after his 24 mandatory break. I believe he was in the 40s, wasn't he? In the 42nd place or so?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, right around there. And he has, he's not as aggressive as he was in the first 24 hours of the race. He's settled into a pattern where he does fairly long runs, stopping a couple of times to snack the dogs, and then will stop for 4 or 5 hours at a time and then keep going. So he did that at Iditarod. The trail past Iditarod is supposed to not be in very good shape, but it looks like he is currently going about 7 miles per hour. So he seems to be doing reasonably well.
I got a chance to see the picture you posted this morning sometime with Martin on the other side of what looked like a river. Can you tell us a little bit about that photo?
Yeah, there was a significant amount of open water. I forget exactly where that was, but I believe it was 10 or 20 miles before the checkpoint of Iditarod. And a bunch of the mushers who were coming in were reporting that there was significant overflow in parts of the trail. Given that the weather has been so warm, that's not unexpected, but it does make it makes it very difficult for dog teams. I know that Lance Mackey said that his team coming over a spot with a lot of open water, that he actually got wet, and that's why he had decided that he was going to stay in Iditarod for a while. It looks like he's going to take his 24 there and make sure that he was nice and dry before he continues.
My dogs are a little spooked by open flowing water like that, what looked like in that picture. I can only imagine how difficult it is to get a 16-dog team across open water like that in conditions like this in Iditarod. Man, I can only attest to what I've gone through. That has to be some ordeal.
Yeah. Obviously, I hope that the trail is good for the majority of the pack who are going to be coming through soon. But the fear is always that when trail conditions start to deteriorate, that they get worse and worse as you get towards the middle and the back of the pack.
Right, and if it does stay warm like this, for those folks that are still in Takotna, McGrath, Ophir, areas like that, I can only imagine what's going to happen to that trail, and especially in those areas where there is open water that you showed in that picture there this morning. So with that, we talked about Martin being back in first, Lance in second, Sonny Linder in third, Jeff King in fourth, Aaron Burmeister in fifth, Mitch Seavey and Jason Mackey in sixth and seventh. What is going on? What is some strategy that at least is being talked about on the various websites and social media?
Well, you know, Aaron Burmeister, who is currently in Iditarod, is making some very, very fast runs. So it definitely looks like Aaron is going to be one of the top people coming into Nome. Allie Zirkel, I just updated, and it looks like Allie Zirkel was in and out of Iditarod, so she's currently in second, chasing after Martin. Certainly, Allie Zirkel has an extremely strong team. She's running basically the dogs that her husband, Alan Moore, used on the Yukon Quest a few weeks ago and won the Yukon Quest with. Allie and Alan also have reported that after Allie's second place finish last year, where, you know, aside from the fact that Dallas Seavey seemed unstoppable in the latter part of the race, she probably would have won if it hadn't been for him and his amazing dog team. Both she and Alan Moore decided after last year at the Iditarod that they wanted to do everything that they could personally to make sure that they weren't holding their teams back. So they both started trying to get in better shape, do some weight training, lose a little bit of weight, and I think that hopefully that is going to pay off for her. You know, she's certainly been a fan favorite for most of the time that she's been competing, if not all the time she's been competing. So that looks good. You know, you never want to discount anyone like a Lance Mackey or a Jeff King, although both of them have not yet taken their 24s.
One thing to note, with Iditarod being the halfway point, Lance Mackey is $3,000 richer for doing so. And I'm sure you read the article in the Anchorage Daily News or on Iditarod.com saying he sure does need that truck. His last truck that he won in 2009 is pretty much held together with duct tape. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, he said, I forget what the exact mileage is, but he said that that truck has something like 270,000 miles on it and cracked windshield, and so he really could use a new truck right about now. You know, I keep meaning to mention, but we haven't talked about it yet, but there is a documentary film crew that is following Lance Mackey up and down the trail, including apparently a helicopter. So hopefully he will see something out of that documentary when it's eventually released as well.
Oh, I'm sure he will. When they were leaving the ceremonial start in downtown Anchorage, I think he had two or three cameras, including a cameraman in the tag sled behind him with a big fancy camera doing all kinds of film work. It looked like definitely looked like a professional job with GoPro cameras all over the place. So everybody loves Lance. Everybody loves the story. So we're all looking forward to seeing that documentary when it is done.
Absolutely. And I've said for years that there really needs to be a Lance Mackey movie. So I'm very happy that it's finally coming to pass.
So tonight we are going to talk about two subjects, the first subject being leased teams, and then our featured musher is Newton Marshall. I know he scratched today, and we're going to get into that a little bit. He didn't scratch for reasons that you may not think. We're going to talk about a rule that is in Iditarod and why he had to scratch, at least from my perspective of it. But first, Alex, this is a topic you brought up this afternoon before we went on air. You want to talk a little bit about leased teams. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, a lot of people who want to run Iditarod who can't take the time or don't have the money to develop their own kennel will essentially rent or hire or lease a team from a musher who has an established kennel. So, and this is particularly popular with mushers who come from outside of the U.S. and Canada, for whom it would really be expensive and time-consuming to bring their own dogs to the Iditarod. There is a little bit of controversy about this practice. Some people feel that by essentially taking someone else's dogs, that you don't have as much of a chance to bond with the dogs. And when push comes to shove, the dogs might not have as much faith in a musher that they haven't known for their entire lives.
Are you still there, Alex?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So I don't have a strong opinion one way or another. I have noticed that there are some mushers who run lease teams seem to do extraordinarily well with them. I know Waddy McDaniel, who ran in 2010 and 2011, was using a lease team from Dean Osmer, I believe, and in 2010 he finished with all 16 of his dogs and said that the dogs were just amazing for him. And then there also are, you know, there are cases where people have dog teams that they're not as familiar with, and either the dogs don't want to run, or they don't want to, they don't really listen to or respect the musher. And there have definitely been times when people have gotten in trouble with that lease team. Now, some would argue that that's more a reflection of the musher and his or her preparation than it is just of the fact that it's not their own dogs.
Well, you know, we've talked about this every year here on Mushing Radio for the past 3 years. This is going into our fourth year of our daily Iditarod coverage. And throughout the years, we've had, like you said, some remarkable success with the folks that lease teams, and other times dismal failures. Just a couple of years ago, several of these leased team mushers were scratching at the first couple, three, four checkpoints. I don't know if it was necessarily because they weren't experienced or they weren't able to compete something as monumental as the Iditarod, but it is a very difficult thing to do, to fly up on an airplane, spend a couple of months with a dog team and expect to be ready to go. Now, one thing that we do have to note, just because they do lease a team does not mean that they have to, that they don't have to complete all of the requirements for the Iditarod. They still have to complete the mandatory qualifying races. They have to be approved by Iditarod, the Iditarod committee. All of those sorts of things do not change just because a person has leased a team. But my opinion, as well as many of a musher, is you need to spend as much time with those dogs as you possibly can. I know many of mushers will say that they're totally against the lease team concept. They want to make sure that all mushers have the experience that they can encounter everything. And I think that that's an important thing. I don't think you can learn that in just two or three qualifying races and a winter up in Alaska. My other concern or opinion with this is, just because a person leases a team doesn't necessarily mean that they are prepared to do a race like the Iditarod. They may do very well in their qualifying races and then fail miserably on the Iditarod Trail. It's one of the most difficult sporting events in the world. And one other thing I want to mention here is many people work with mushers for several years and run their puppy teams or their B teams. And I know we've talked about that on several occasions. And do very well. Martin Booser's kennel being one, Paul Gephardt's kennel being another, and of course many a kennels on down the line, including Lance Mackey and the CVs and on down the line. Anything else you want to mention on that, Alex?
Well, you know, you could argue also with that people who have been handlers and have been around and working with the dogs for several years will have much more of a bond with the dogs, and the dogs will have much more trust in them just because they've been the people doling out the food and and they've been the people scooping the poop and taking care of the dogs for several years. So so again, I would agree with you that spending as much time as possible with the dogs is probably a key, because if everything goes well, you don't necessarily need that extra bit. But in Iditarod, things usually don't all go well. You usually will have, in the course of a race, a half dozen or a dozen times when things have just gone kind of wrong, and you need to be able to have that unspoken communication and that bond with your dogs, that you know that the dogs know that you're taking care of them, and you know that the dogs are taking care of you.
You know, Alex, probably the most truthful antidote in mushing would be the weakest link on the team is always the musher. And I think that is true whether you've been on the runners for 30 years and have trained up a team of pups all the way through adulthood and they're running in their fifth or sixth Iditarod with you, or you come up a couple of months early and jump on a sled and be ready to go. The weakest link is always that person behind the sled. And I think that experience and time on the trail with those dogs is going to help you a heck of a lot more than just a few months with them or possibly a year or two as well.
Absolutely. And you will hear that sentiment come from almost every musher. I've heard Ali Zirkel say it. I've heard Lance Mackey say it. I've heard, you know, everyone from Jeff King down to new rookies say exactly that, that almost always the weakest link in the team is the guy or the woman behind the sled.
That's exactly right. So we would love to hear your guys' opinions about lease teams. You can do it on Twitter at Dogworks Radio or on Alex Speed. He is very active after the show. He is at Coldfoot Films. Or over on our Facebook page at Dogworks Radio, we post a lot of things back and forth and get pretty good comments back and forth as well. So make sure, let's keep this discussion alive and make sure you hit us up over there on social media, because I would love to hear you guys' comments as well, especially from mushers that are listening to the show, obviously, that are not in Iditarod. So tonight, Alex, we have about 15 minutes to go doing what we always do here on the show. We're going to talk about a featured musher. We typically pick the mushers that we're going to talk about sometime early in the day before our broadcast, so we can do a little bit of research, a little history on them, so we have at least a story to tell. And I know our musher today, his name is Newton Marshall. He is the Jamaican musher, but unfortunately, just about an hour to 2 hours before airtime, he had to scratch. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a minute, but let's talk about Newton Marshall, Alex.
Newton Marshall is a very, very popular musher. He is a fan favorite known as Mushing Mon Newton. Every time you see him, he will say, "Yeah, Mon," in that great Jamaican accent that I can't do very well. He was born in St. Anne, Jamaica in 1983 and began mushing relatively late in 2005. He fell in love with the idea of the sport, and he came up to Whitehorse in the Yukon Territory to train with Hans Gott in late 2007, and he learned how to mush dogs and learned all about snow and about being very cold. He ran the Yukon Quest in 2009, and he finished 13th out of a field of 29 teams and was voted the Special Spirit of the North Award for best exemplifying the spirit of the Yukon Quest. And after that, he started attracting more big-time sponsors. He was sponsored by the Jamaican Tourism Council and Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville restaurant. And with the help of those sponsorships, he was able to lease a Lance Mackey team to run the Iditarod. And he ran in 2010, finished in 47th place, a very respectable middle-of-the-pack finish for a rookie. He's the first person from the Caribbean ever to compete in and finish the Iditarod. He ran again in 2011 with Mackey Dogs, but his team got sick. There was a lot of there was a lot of flu that was going through a lot of the teams, wound up scratching in Anvik. That was on the southern route as well. Partially as a result of him scratching, he lost some of his sponsors. He didn't compete in Iditarod last year, and this year he came back. He is leasing a team of yearlings from Kathleen Frederick's kennel, and her kennel, she combined kennels with Kelly Griffin, so they have all of their dogs together. And Marshall was living this past winter with Kelly Griffin in Wasilla and working for Room and Board as a part-time handler and taking care of the dogs in the kennel and some of her other animals. He said before the race that he didn't really intend to run Iditarod this year, but he was up in Alaska last summer for a vacation and decided that he was going to sign up. He said, and this is, again, this was obviously before he scratched, he said his goal was not to push the dogs and try to get a top 20 finish, but to get them familiar with the route to Nome and just to have fun and do a relaxed schedule of 6 hours of running followed by 6 hours of rest. He started attracting a lot more sponsorship and a lot more attention as the race got closer. There's a group of Alaska Cleveland Browns football fans called the Anchorage Snow Dogs, D-A-W-G-S, who sponsored him, and Canada Goose came on board to sponsor him very, very recently. In 2010, the first year he ran, everywhere you went, you would see Iditarod fans who had these very colorful, I'm rooting for Newton buttons. And the other great quote from him is, he said that he didn't have the opportunity when he was growing up to go to school very much, and he wanted to run the Iditarod so that he could show kids in Jamaica and all over the world that if you want something, you just have to go out and get it for yourself. And if you do that, your results can be boundless.
You know, we had Newton on our Mushing Radio show a few months ago, earlier this fall, and he is such an inspiration. It was so cool to hear him talk about growing up in Jamaica, then coming to, I guess he started mushing in Minnesota and then made his way to Canada and then on up to Alaska from there. What a great guy. It sounds like a guy that you would definitely want to hang out with on the trail. But what is interesting, Alex, is the reason he had to scratch was a little-known rule in the Iditarod race is if you lose a dog or you cannot account for the dog, you are either have to wait at a checkpoint or at some location until that dog is found either by you or a snow machine or another team, or you have to scratch. And I believe that's what happened with Newton this afternoon. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. He had a dog on his team named May, and May apparently got loose on the last run that he was on. So because he didn't have the dog, he was waiting at the checkpoint in, I believe, Nikolai. He was waiting in Nikolai. The dog got loose somewhere between Roan and Nikolai. And so he's been waiting in Nikolai hoping that the dog would be found so that he could continue, but the dog has not yet been found. The Iditarod Trail Committee and a lot of the locals are out looking for the dog, and hopefully the dog will turn up and will be okay. But without being able to account for that dog, he's not able to continue the race, and that's why he scratched.
You know, this is only speculation, but my guess is that dog was probably in the sled bag. He'd probably had to take him off the line and put him on in the sled bag for injury or for the dog being tired or whatever. It's pretty rare for a dog to get loose when traveling down the trail on the line, meaning he slips out of his collar, therefore slips out of his harness, and then takes off. It is almost always when the team is stopped or the dog is in the bag for one reason or another. It's a very common procedure to carry your dog down the trail in your sled bag, and most mushers will have some form of way of attaching that dog in the sled, whether it be a neckline on a D-ring or something like that. So I'm betting that's what happened. We do hope that the dog is found safe and reunited with Newton, because I can only imagine what he's going through in losing one of his buddies out there on the trail in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is probably even more frightening and even worse, because this is a dog that belongs to someone else, that he has, you know, been entrusted to Newton, and so I'm sure that he wants to do everything possible that he can to make sure that the dog is okay as well.
That's exactly right. So hopefully everything goes well for Newton and his team, and the dog may get there on the trail. But Alex, we have about 4 minutes left. What else is on tap?
You know, we had another scratch this afternoon as well, which was Dave Sawatsky scratched in McGrath. And he had been way, way at the back of the pack and was having some problems with some of his dogs. So he scratched out of concern for his dogs. There was also another story that came out this morning. Kyle Hopkins from the Anchorage Daily News reported that Travis Beals? Had gone for 30 hours without sleep, and he was going down the Dalzell Gorge, and actually fell asleep on the back of the runners, and woke up, and had no power on his headlamp, so he was actually going down into the gorge with a dog team just running in the dark, and he couldn't see anything, which has to be one of the most terrifying things in the world. He said that he feels that Kid Rock saved his life. He was listening to Kid Rock on his iPod and was able to flick the buttons a few times to generate enough light so that he could see in his sled where he had another headlamp for another bulb for his headlamp, or another battery probably. And then was able to change it and was able to see and make it safely down the gorge.
You know, I read that story this morning, and I've been there. I haven't necessarily lost my team from being so sleep deprived that I'm totally incoherent. But that happens very often on Iditarod Trail, and what a scary thing, especially on that part of the trail, probably. If not the most, but possibly the second scariest portion of the Iditarod Trail, right there at the Dalzell Gorge. Good thing he's okay. Good thing nothing happened. And I don't know if you had mentioned it there, Alex, but he was stuck between the two portions of his sled, the front portion and the drag portion, when he came to and woke up. He'd gone without sleep for 30 hours, and then he just kind of woke himself up, and there he was pretty much being dragged in between the sled. Got to be a scary feeling out there. Glad he's okay, and you got to love Kid Rock. I'm sure he would get a kick out of that as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking Kid Rock needs to sponsor him for next year's Iditarod.
I think that would be a cool thing to do. I believe Travis is the youngest musher on the trail. I think he's only 21 years old, and when he was running by there at the ceremonial start, man, he sure looked young considering all those grizzled veterans out there.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing I wanted to mention real briefly is a friend of mine has pointed out several times on Twitter that the local press should not be referring to Martin Boozer as an aging musher, because all of the mushers are aging, and it should only be news when they stop aging.
There you go. Alex, we're about out of time. I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay?
Okay, thanks.
On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, calling in from California, this is Robert Forto for Mushing Radio. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.